Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Head to patreon.com/chasingEarhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July the 2nd, 1937, iconic aviatrix Amelia Earhart, along with her navigator, the legendary Fred Noonan, vanished over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. Over 8 decades later, all over this world lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, just waiting to be put together. Welcome to Season 2 and the final 5 episodes of the Chasing Earhart podcast.
Searching. Science, news, knowledge, the future. Awesomeness found. Scanning. Supernova imminent. Brain bomb achieved. Supernova style science news with Julie Seven Sage.
I have always known that Amelia Earhart's reach and legacy and inspiration loomed large over modern day aviation, aerospace, and STEM. However, when we started this project many years ago, even I didn't understand just how deep that reach stretched. Tonight, we're all going to find out. Amelia Earhart's legacy and inspiration touches us all. And what she set out to achieve so long ago is showing today, if we look hard enough. A lot of people might argue that AE's reach extends only to certain people, demographics, or fields. However, tonight, you're all going to find out that AE's legacy is alive and thriving in ways that will blow your mind. At just 15 years old, Julie Seven Sage is a living, breathing example of what Amelia Earhart wanted to inspire in the 1930s. If tonight's episode tells you anything, it's that Julie and young men and women like her are taking a legacy set so long ago to heights that would impress even Amelia Earhart herself. It's not every day that we have a guest on this show that already has a career while they're in high school, but tonight is that night. Joining me via Zoom from New Hampshire is Julie Seven Sage, and we're going to cover a handful of topics tonight, but this is a young woman that will inspire you and make you ask yourself, what am I doing with my life? Because at just 15 years old, Julie is a rock star of STEM for a number of reasons. Julie, this is a pleasure. Welcome to Chasing Earhart.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
So now let's kick this show off tonight by getting some housekeeping done as always, but your answer may be a little bit different than most of our guests. So we'll ask our opening question a little differently as well. Can I ask you to tell me about your education thus far and your fields of interest?
All right. So for my education so far, as you know, I am in high school. I've only gone to public school. I've never gone to a private or a charter school, but I have taken some college courses online. So far, I've taken 2 college courses. My first one was a Harvard course called Super Earths in Life by the Professor Dimitar Sasolov at Harvard. And I got a 96% on that, which is actually higher than some of his grad students, which is pretty funny. My second course was public speaking from the University of Washington, and I got 100% on that. I also took a high school course that year that was a few years ago in like the summer of 5th grade, and I got 100% on that course, and that was an Algebra 1.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, you're talking about your scores. I mean, you're obviously very, very intelligent. I want to ask you something that a lot of, because we have a lot of young people that listen to the show, people that are your age from like 14, 15, 16 and on, and they listen for young role models like yourself. I want to ask you, when did you realize that you were really interested in some of the fields that you've really kind of blossomed into?
So there's a few stories in this. I've always really been interested in science from ever since in the beginning, like since I can remember. I've been interested in science. But for the field of astrophysics, which is the main scientific field that I want to go into, I really decided that when I was actually 6 years old. And so what happened was randomly one day I walked up to my dad. I'm like, Dad, I know what I want to be when I grow up. And he's like, oh, what do you want to be? And I'm like, I want to do something with space. And he's like, all right, do you want to be an astronaut? Because that's usually what a lot of kids during that time said. I'm like, no, that's too dangerous. And then he's like, okay, do you want to be an astronomer? And I'm like, no. And so then he was trying to think of something that a little 6-year-old would know. And he didn't really know. So he asked, and he's like, well, what do you want to be then? And I went into this long spiel of how I want to know the calculations behind the planets' movements. I want to know more about black holes and wormholes and quasars. And like, I listed all of these things. And he's like, oh, so you want to be an astrophysicist? And I didn't know what that was. And so I asked what that was. And he said that it was Neil deGrasse Tyson and Stephen Hawking, who were two of the people that I looked up to at that time. And I'm like, yeah, them. And then for my field, for going into science communication, I was always loved telling people science facts. I actually got in trouble with it in first grade because I always interrupted my teacher with either a random fact. It wasn't always science. Or I tell her when she was wrong, especially in science, like when she'd say, like, for instance, the sun is made of gas, I'd blurt out, no, it's made of plasma. So her and I made a deal for her to try to shut me up and not interrupt her.
Yeah.
That as long as I didn't blur out in class at the end of every school day, I could have any science fact that I wanted. And we called it Julie's Science Facts. And from that, it was just like, yes, I want to do this all the time and do it to everyone.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, I want to ask you, so you're talking about grade school. Do you, and obviously this is Chasing Earhart after all, so we are an Amelia Earhart podcast. I want to ask you, because you might be actually a great person to ask this, do you have any early recollections of Amelia Earhart? Do you remember the first time you heard the name? Did they teach you about her in grade school? Can you enlighten us all about that?
So I can't remember exactly the first time I heard her name, but I know it wasn't in school. I read books a lot. I read my first book by myself before I turned 4, and which is a pretty early time to start reading. But the book that I heard it from was from the Who Is series, where they do a bunch of books based on famous people. And one of the main ones that people promote is the Amelia Earhart one. For school-wise, they never really taught about Amelia Earhart. A lot of the history classes, especially in where I live, they focus more on events and timelines. They never really focus on people. So the most that they ever said about Amelia Earhart was she was the first woman to fly across the Atlantic Ocean by herself, and then she disappeared on another one of her flights. And that was pretty much it. I recently looked up some information about her, though, once you contacted me and everything, and I learned a lot more about her disappearance and about her background and everything.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, and that's the book you mentioned, Who Was Amelia Earhart? That's a shout out to Kate Jerome, who's a project guest of ours, too, and was on the show, too, and sat on our panel in Atchison. So that book is really popular with young kids as far as introducing them to Amelia Earhart, which is pretty cool. So I'm glad that you actually mentioned that book as a way of introducing yourself to her. That's pretty great.
Yeah, it was a good book.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And we'll definitely put a link to that book in the show notes tonight. Now, I want to dive in and get into your professional career, which is amazing just to be able to say that, because you're in high school, which is amazing. That's one of the most fascinating aspects of what you do and kind of what attracted our team to you in particular. I want to ask you to start by telling me about the STEAM Squad. Tell us the origin of the group and tell us a little bit about what you guys are all about.
Well, first, let me introduce the STEAM Squad. The STEAM Squad is a group of teenage science girls, or like science advocates, STEAM, as in the name. And it's just a group of us who are best friends. And really what our goal is to help inspire girls by showing that there are girls who can do it. Because there's this myth that girls can't do it. But all the girls in the STEAM Squad shows that girls can. And not all of us are super geniuses. Not all of us are inventors or anything like that. And we're also international. We're actually in 4 different countries. And we're hoping to get even more girls into it. But another thing that we do is that it was also made to have us support, to give another way for us to support each other, because we are friends. It really started about 2 years ago. So the actual official STEAM Squad started about a year ago, but what the seeds of the beginning started 2 years ago. And that's really when I first got onto Twitter 2 years ago, and I started becoming friends. And so the first really 3 main people I became friends with was Allie Weber, Taylor Richardson, and Jordan Reeves, who are the other officers right now. And really what happened was after space camp, Allie got in a car wreck. And I wanted to do something for her. And, well, first, I was messaging people. Like, I messaged Taylor and everything. And I'm like, okay, Allie got in a car wreck. This is really bad. Because we were all talking during that time. And Taylor's like, yeah, we should do something. Let's, like, send a card and have everyone sign it. The thing was, there was people in Canada. We were friends with that were in Canada during that time. And people around across the entire country. So it would have taken, like, 5 weeks to sign a card. And I'm like, well, I've been learning some video editing for my show that my parents were doing. And I was learning the editing. And I'm like, why don't we have a bunch of people send me videos and I'll edit together into a video. And so that's what we did. We had a bunch of the girls of the beginning Steam Squad and some other famous people who are actually some of our mentors and also friends do a video, and I sent it to Allie. And it's something that Allie has, and it's for her to, if she ever wants to show anyone. But we sent this video, and a little bit before that, she commented on a tweet that was like, it was this actor, musician, and a dancer or something, and they're like, oh, this is my squad. And then Allie's like, oh, I prefer my STEM squad, and then listed a bunch of us. And so that's where that idea really started. And then we tried to form this STEAM squad. It didn't exactly work, and it kind of fell through, but Allie and I still wanted to do it. So then a little bit later, Allie and I were like, okay, we're going to found the STEAM squad. And that's why Allie and I are the founders, co-founders of the STEAM squad. And like, but we can't do it just by ourselves. It can't just be us. Let's get in Taylor and Jordan. And then all of us are the officers. And then from that point, we started asking girls from the last STEAM squad and the new girls. And it just, we really started this whole organization to do what I was talking about before, to help inspire and to help support each other.
That's incredible. How many people are involved in the organization now, total?
Right now, there are 13 people. We have a list of more girls to add. At some point, we may add boys and just get a bunch of teenage kids all. And we have a bunch of people who are, because we do have an age limit to make sure, because we did have an issue with that before. And so, but we have a few people that are once they get of age, they are totally getting invited in because they are absolutely amazing.
That's incredible. Now, I want to ask you something that I've been wanting to ask you for a little while now since we started chatting about having you on the show. And I think you, again, you're a great person to kind of stand on this platform and talk about this. Tell us why it's so important for young women to get into, why is it important for women to get into STEM just at a young age? What is the big deal? Kind of just, educate us all on that.
For importance, I think it's important to have a large diversity of different thought and everything. And there's this large movement of saying that girls and kids aren't interested in STEAM, but that isn't really true. In elementary school, for statistics, you can see that there is a very high interest. But then during middle school and high school, you see a very large decline. And so one of the things that I've ran into with this is that there's not a lot of science programs for middle schoolers and high schoolers. There's a lot of STEM programs for elementary schoolers, and there's a lot of STEM programs for college students. But really in the middle, there's not a lot there. There's a few really good programs, like Science Olympiad is an amazing program that my high school held this year, and they do it every year. It's a really awesome competition. But my middle school, there was a middle school division, and personally, my middle school never did it. And so there is a lot of schools not participating in having science programs. Another thing that I've noticed is that there's not a lot of mentorship. So there's a lot of adults mentor college students, and then seniors and possibly juniors for high schoolers, but anything below that, they just totally ignore. And they're like, oh, that's cute, you like science. They don't really take it seriously. And so that can also really hurt people's, girls and even boys' interest in science during this time.
Yeah, you make excellent points there. And you just mentioned mentorship, and I wanted to ask you a follow-up question on that. as someone who is, you know, you're in high school now, obviously as you were younger, you talked about your younger years and kind of how you were inspired, and your dad mentioned Neil deGrasse Tyson, which we'll get to in a little bit. But how important do you think is it for young girls and boys to have role models in science growing up? How important is it for them to look to someone like a Neil deGrasse Tyson or someone like that to inspire them to be better, to be something that they never thought they could be?
I think it's super important. So a quote that's commonly said is you have to see it to be it. And to be fully honest, I don't overly like that quote. I really prefer you have to see it to believe it. Because if you have to see it to be it, then you can never have a first person. But if you can see it to believe it, you can see, like, a little boy can see Amelia Earhart, for instance, and believe that they can be a pilot, that they can do it because she could. So it's not really, you have to see someone of your color, of your gender, of whatever else to be that. It's, you can see someone of a different color, of a different gender, you can see someone else doing it and think that you can do it too. And I think it's important for everyone to see people of different colors and of different genders and of different everything else doing things and to believe that people can do that. And so I believe that mentorship is very important to show that people can do what, like, for a kid to see someone doing what they want to do or something in that similar direction, I think that is very, very important.
Very powerfully stated indeed. Now, I wanted to ask you, before we get to your YouTube channel, which we'll definitely talk about in great detail in a bit, you have a really, you mentioned Neil deGrasse Tyson earlier. He's one of my favorite people. You have a really great story about Neil deGrasse Tyson, and I watched the video, but a lot of our listeners might not know this story. Can you tell us about your experience meeting and interacting with Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Yes. So the first time that I met him, because I've actually met him twice now, the first time I met him was when I was 10 years old. And for Yule, which is what I celebrate instead of Christmas, instead it's a 12-day-long holiday. For a kid's day, which is basically Christmas, but the kids take control, I got tickets to see his show for a January show. And I was super ecstatic. I was so excited. And so we went and we watched it. And I brought, right beforehand, I read Stephen Hawking's newspaper about gray holes at dinner. It was a short paper, but it was, like, really cool. And I wanted to ask Neil what his thoughts were on it. And so at the end, he's like, okay, for anyone who wants to ask any questions, come at down at the end of the aisle. There is a microphone. We were like halfway up the aisle. I shot out and like ran down like Sonic or something. It was like really fast. And I was the first one at that microphone. There's two microphones. The other microphone went first and I was the second question. And so, but he saw my shirt because I was wearing a rhinestone nebula pattern shirt. And he's like, oh, I like your shirt. And he realized that not the entire audience could see my shirt, of course, because I was like this little tiny 10-year-old standing at the front. And so he's like, okay, come here. So he had me stand in front of the stage. And still, the cameras couldn't get my shirt and the audience couldn't get my shirt. So he was like, hold your arms out. And I'm like, okay. I didn't know what was going on. And all of a sudden, he reaches down and pulls me up on stage. I became a total dead weight, so I kind of feel bad. But I was totally shocked. And I just couldn't believe what was going on. And so he stood there pointing at my shirt, showing the audience. The like entire like audience was kind of like clapping a little bit. And then he let me down. He's like, okay, so what's your question? And so I still remember the question because of how big of a moment this was. And I'm like,
so is Stephen Hawking's theory of changing black holes to gray holes and also changing the event horizon to the apparent horizon because of the firewall paradox, what's your take on it?
Yeah, so.
Yeah, kid!
I told you. You'll just chill for a couple of minutes here. I'll be back in a minute.
Lee needs to say he was a little shocked this little 10-year-old asked this question. And so he went to the other side of the stage, grabbed a stool, pulled it over, put it down, sat on it. He's like, okay, folks, this is going to take a while. But after I asked a question, the entire, 4,000 people, because it was one of his biggest audiences at the time. I think it was his biggest audience at the time, was all clapping for me. And it just felt really amazing that all these people were clapping for me. And that was another solidification for me wanting to be a science communicator, because I wanted to feel that moment again. So he answered my question to the best he could. He didn't read the paper beforehand because it released that night. So he basically said, you know what? I'm not going to argue against the guy. He's a genius.
Wow. That's an incredible story. And of course, the entire video is on your YouTube channel, which we will, of course, have a link to in the show notes for tonight's episode. I highly encourage you to watch the video. I mean, Julie just explained it, but when you watch it, it's really, really remarkable to see somebody meet, to see a kind of a budgeoning science, someone who's really passionate about science meet like an icon like that. It's really, really a beautiful moment. So thank you for sharing that story. I can't wait for people to see the video. Now, speaking of your YouTube channel, I've watched some of your videos on your YouTube channel in preparation for this interview. And I have to say that you have a pretty great history thus far. The channel is very robust. It's grown a lot. Chat me up about the origins of your show and how you've used it to grow your audience and raise awareness for STEAM.
All right. So the origins of the show, I actually wanted to do a show when I was much younger, but we didn't really we didn't exactly know what to do with it. Also, we wanted to wait a while to make sure that this is what I wanted to do. And so eventually I grew old enough and I still wanted to do a show. We were kind of trying to figure out what we wanted to do, and we decided on doing science news to try it out first. And so where the name came about is it was like a random saying that I just had at one point. My dad and I were talking and he's like, oh, a brain bomb, which is like mind-blowing fact that it just blows your mind. And I'm like, brain bomb supernova style, as in like I just meant it as like a very big brain bomb. He's like, oh my god, that's amazing. And so we use that in the news. It's the name's pretty long, so as a result, but it's a pretty cool name. And we just started that. So recently I've wanted to do more shows. And so that's why recently I started a second show called The STEAM Shop, which is a maker show. I just really love making things, and I make things all the time. I draw all the time. I'm really big into art and engineering and all of that kind of stuff and technology. And so I'm like, you know what? Let's do a maker show. And so we started that one. And then I have a third show planned called Science Sage, which is where I'm going to be explaining science concepts, ideas, and theories, and laws, and all the cool stuff that I love in all different areas of science. But for that, we still have to build the set. So I'm not exactly for sure when that one's going to get released. And there's like a few other ideas I have. So we've started the network 7 Sage Labs, which is the name of the channel. And I'm just hoping to really get that into a big science network. And who knows, maybe in the future, I'll have other shows that other people are hosting on and have this become an actual science network, because that would be really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And YouTube is really a breeding ground for creativity. And it's incredible to see all these young folks actually create their own shows and create their own YouTube networks and channels. It's just really amazing. And I applaud you for it. It's really awesome. You're also a mentor for the Girls Who Code program, which I think is incredible because I love coding. It's something I've been doing since I was a kid. I'm teaching my 9-year-old son to code Minecraft right now. It's a lot of fun. tell us about the program and how you got involved in that.
So the program we're not doing the program anymore because eventually no one really wanted to go. We ran it out of the local Boys and Girls Club. So how it started was actually a more kind of famous person locally in New Hampshire named Jillian McGregor. She started a coding program that was not Girls Who Code at the local Boys and Girls Club. And I went into the program because I wanted to learn how to code. And I think originally it was Scratch IT was the name of the program.
Right.
And so it dealt with Scratch and everything. But a lot of us girls who went into it, because it was like a girls only thing, we were just zooming ahead and we were just making all of these crazy programs in Scratch. I even Because we did some like STEM fairs for the program and like other upcoming, like in the next few years of this Scratch IT program. And I made an operation game, which I called Operation Nerd. And I made it out of foam board and a makey board and then programmed it with Scratch. And my mentor, Jillian, was like, oh my God, when she looked at my code, because there was just pages of block code just programming this game. And there was other times where she just had me like quickly whip something up for a STEM fair because someone forgot something. And she said I was one of the fastest coders in Scratch she's ever seen because of how quickly I could put it together. But then the Scratch IT program fell through, but she wanted to continue doing a coding program. So she did her own for a year where she was teaching us JavaScript. And then after that, she went into the Girls Who Code program and tried that. And so there we could, it was more of a do what you want based on the curriculum. And then she had to go to college, of course. So she left and my mom took over. So my mom was the main teacher and I was a big helper. So I was a mentor for other girls. We tried to get other girls in the Boys and Girls Club. We ran that for 2 or so years. But eventually it was really just me and like 2 other girls. And then everyone else just was using the computers to play games. They didn't really want to code. So at this point, for the girls who really wanted to do it, we're teaching ourselves at this point, but we're still in connection and stuff. So if we ever need help, we'll contact each other or they'll contact my mom for help and stuff like that.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, those of our listeners that are familiar with what we do know of the Mars Generation. That is, of course, the foundation of another one of our project guests, astronaut Abby, who also sat on our discussion panel in Atchison last year. There's no words. She's also in our documentary and everything. She's really incredible. You were named one of the Mars Generation's 24 under 24 leaders and innovators in STEAM and space. Tell us about receiving that honor from the Mars Generation. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, so it was the first year that they did the award. So that's what makes it even more remarkable, in my opinion. What's really cool with it is that they contacted me, and I think they contacted me through YouTube. It was like they like commented on one of my videos and I was like, oh, okay. But I knew like Abby beforehand and talked to her a little bit. Because before that I did the Train Like a Martian challenge, which they hold every year. And I think that's actually the way I met Ali Weber, was through the challenge.
Yeah.
And I also won the Stargazer Lottie doll that year from the Train Like a Martian challenge, which was really cool. And I still have the doll because it's super awesome.
That's awesome.
And Lottie Dolls is a great company because they do a bunch of STEM dolls. They actually made a doll of Ali Weber. So like she has a doll with them. And then they did a suit with Taylor Richardson and they just do a bunch of STEM dolls and other other dolls based on real people. But okay. Anyways, back to the Mars Generation. And when they contacted me, it was just really awesome and made me feel really good. And I was like, wow, I didn't know people thought of me like this. Like, I didn't know like other people thought of me like that because I knew like my friends and stuff and some other people that we found. But they're like, we want to give you this award. And I was like, whoa. And that was really the start of my major year of scientific awards, which was last year. And because last year I won five different challenges for 5 different projects or like in experiments and 4 different national and international programs. And it may be a world record. We don't know. I may be tied with one of my other friends. But as far as we know, I probably have the most in that area for that kind of stuff.
That's incredible. I want to ask you about, as you're talking about these accolades that you're starting to rack up now, because you've been grinding on this since you were 10, and you've been working on this for a long time. I mean, you're only 15 now, but I mean, what does that feel like to you? Or do you feel any kind of sense of vindication that you're starting to get a lot of these accolades and this recognition? Was that ever in the cards for you personally? Did you ever want that? Or did you just want to do what you loved and just kind of, you know, it is what it is, so to speak?
My thought on it was it'd be cool to get the accolades and I'd love to win competitions for inventions, like the 3M Young Scientist Challenge, where I got the New Hampshire State Merit Award, and then the National Science Foundation Comic Award for my art. And for all of that, I thought it'd be cool to get it, but I didn't find it necessary for me to keep going. No matter what, even if I didn't win all of those awards, I'd still be working on my science. I'd still be working on my show, because I find it important and that's what I want to do. So even if I didn't get recognition for it, I would still be going on that path.
You mentioned a couple of your friends had people you knew had dolls, you know, that were kind of modeled after them and things like that. But you actually have a comic book, which is, I think, 100 times cooler, in my opinion, personally. Anyone that knows me knows that I'm a comic book nerd. So when I saw that you were featured in a Marvel comic, which is called The Unstoppable Wasp, I knew I had to ask you about that. How in the world did you sync up with Marvel?
So one, I just have to say to the audience, buy The Unstoppable Wasp. It is an absolutely amazing comic. It's like girl power. It talks about STEM. It actually has real science facts in it, first of all. So that's like really cool. For the first issue, which was back in like a year or two ago, I did a show on it because I thought the comic was really cool, because it is really cool. And one of the things that I found so cool about it is in the back of the comic, they interviewed two female scientists, real life female scientists. And I was like, oh my God, that is so cool that they're actually showing real female scientists to the readers of the comic. And so I did a show on it, and the writer, editor, and illustrator at the time really liked it. And they followed me on Twitter. And I just like, we just eventually became friends. Unfortunately, after the 8th issue, it was canceled. No one knows exactly why, but it was probably the sales weren't really good. But then the trades came out and I was pushing the trades like crazy. And then they brought it back. Marvel actually brought it back. And when I heard that, I almost started crying. During also that entire time, I was doing all of my science stuff, and the writer and illustrator and editor was seeing all of the science stuff that I was doing. So then when the comic got brought back, I was talking to the writer, who Jeremy Whitley, who was absolutely amazing. He's so nice. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad you brought this back. If you ever need to, like, if you ever need female scientists, I have a whole list of people, and I would totally be willing to give the list to you so you can interview them all in the comic and everything. And I'm like, and I can't wait. And he's like, oh, that's really cool, thank you. I'm actually talking to one of the people that I want to have in the first comic. And I'm like, oh really, who is it? I might know her. And he's like, yeah, you actually do know her. And I'm like, oh, who is it? And he's like, it's you. And I was in the car, and we just pulled up at the mall, and my dad showed me. He saw it first on his phone, because he has all of my accounts on his phone. And I dropped the phone and literally started crying. I like curled up in a ball and started crying. Wow. So I was so happy. Like, I'm even tearing up right now just thinking back to it, because it's such an emotional moment. And I just couldn't believe that he wanted me in the first new issue. It would pick up where it left off, and yeah. But it was the new number one, and he wanted me in the first issue, and I just was bawling my eyes out.
Wow.
And then he was like, yeah, and we're planning to have you with this other scientist, well, like this other female, and I actually know her. She's a director and everything. I can't pronounce her last name, but she does a bunch of these really cool, like, STEM movie kind of things. And he's like, just send me, like, all the stuff you're doing. So I sent him everything, and he's like, oh, this is not fitting in half a page. So he put it into 2 pages, because I took up an entire 2 pages. Actually, it was over 2 pages. We had to shorten stuff down because he couldn't fit because of everything that I've been doing.
Incredible.
And then I was in the back of the comic, and it was just absolutely amazing. They drew my face, so I have, like, my face and what it would look like as a comic, which is, like, so cool. And it's just absolutely amazing. And these new issues is just been, he has just been knocking down barriers. And one of the things that I love the most about Jeremy and the Unstoppable Wasp is it talks about real life things. So in these most recent comics, they were actually talking about bipolar disorder, because Nadia Van Dyne, who's the main character and is the daughter of Hank Pym or Ant-Man.
Right.
And her she's not the daughter of Janet, but Janet has adopted her.
Right.
Nadia has bipolar disorder, and Jeremy actually talked to multiple people who are experts in that kind of stuff to make sure he got it right. And it's really the first story that I've ever seen to get something like a mental disorder like that right. And he's not, it's like not like he brings it up and then just wipes it out of the story. It is a part of Nadia's life, and it shows that part of it because it's really a part of people's life who has it. And it's just, he deals with it so well, and it's so realistic, and Nadia is just so personable. I relate to her like so much, and that's another reason why Jeremy and Alana, who's the editor, wanted me as the first person, because they kind of feel like I'm kind of the real life Nadia, because not only do I do a bunch of science stuff and I'm a teenager, but I also co-run the Steam Squad, which is basically kind of the Agents of Girl in a way, just real life and with other teenage girls. It's just absolutely amazing to be part of a comic. Like, it's just, I still can't go over it.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I still can't get over it because it's just so amazing.
Yeah, no, it's remarkable. It really is. Now, we've covered a lot of ground tonight. I have one final question for you. We are, of course, it's going to take us full circle back to Earhart. This is obviously a legacy piece. Chasing Earhart is not really about how she died. It's about how she lived. And I think what's really great about Amelia Earhart, and you may or may not know this, but back in 1935, when women weren't really allowed to do much at all, and she was breaking all these barriers, she was an advisor at Purdue University in Indiana. And Amelia Earhart, before she disappeared on her world flight, was actually coming up with a science lab where she could actually house and mount engines and things, and women can go in there and tinker with engines and figure out how the workings of the inner workings of planes worked and all that stuff. And she was really one of those people that was pushing STEM and STEAM before they were ever even a thing. And I love to talk to young women like you, because you guys, I think, are shining examples of what she would have stood for all those years ago. And I want to get your thoughts on her impact and legacy. You can talk personally to you, you can talk broad spectrum, whatever you want, but what in your eyes is the impact and legacy of someone like Amelia Earhart, do you think?
I think Amelia Earhart has had a large impact on a large number of people. Like, back then when she was around, she had a large impact because she showed little girls that they could do things that a man could do. That's really it. And it shows little boys that girls can work alongside them. And one of the greatest things about Amelia is that she wanted equality and justice. She wanted to make sure that women were equal with men, and that they could stand side by side, and that they could work together. And I think that's really one of the big impacts that she had, because she showed that that could be done. Because a lot of the things that people don't talk about is when she disappeared, her navigator was a male. She was working with a male just perfectly fine. It wasn't a problem for her. And so that showed other people that women and men could work together perfectly fine. That also shows people of today that it's important to be equal. It's important for men and women to be standing side by side and working together. So that's really what I feel her legacy is showing, that no matter color, gender, intelligence, disability, you can work together and make something amazing.
I think if we had a theme for tonight's show, it would be that the biggest dreams do come true. Now, I want you to plug, before we wrap up tonight, please plug your website, your YouTube, Twitter, everything you want to plug. Go for it.
My website is supernovastylesciencenews.com. Another website that I really want to promote is the steamsquad.org. That's the Steam Squad's website. We all have a bio of every single amazing girl that's on there, so you can read up on everyone, and I definitely think you should do that because these girls are just mind-blowingly amazing in what they have done. For Twitter, there are a lot of accounts. I run like 5. It's really hard to keep track. But my Supernova Style Science News Twitter is at supernova_style. For Seven Stage Labs, it's at Seven Stage Labs. For the Steam Squad, it's at the Steam Squad. So I think it's at the Steam_squad. Just look for a green logo. And then for the Steam Shop, it's at the Steam Shop. For Instagram, which I also have all my accounts on Instagram, for Supernova Style, it's Supernova Style Science. For Seven Stage Labs, it's at Seven Stage Labs. And then for the Steam Shop, it's at the Steam Shop.
Truly, this has been one of the funnest interviews I've ever done. Keep on doing what you're doing. Congratulations on all of your success. Tonight has been a genuine pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, part of our Legacy retrospective series. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Come back to ChasingEarhart.com each week for another new podcast. While at ChasingEarhart.com, visit our archives and our blog to hear all of our past episodes and interviews with guests such as Brad Meltzer, Tom Vinson, Candace Fleming, Jessica Cox, Abigail Harrison, and Shasta Ways. You can also hear interviews with representatives of all of the relevant hypotheses regarding the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, such as Tom King, Dick Spink, Gary LaPook, Rick Gillespie, Andy Sherrill, and more. Also at our site, you can find hundreds more posts, project updates, and much more information regarding the life and disappearance of Amelia Earhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a show without any sponsors or ads. We rely on support from listeners like you to keep the Chasing Earhart project operating. You can donate to the show, and as our thank you, receive bonus podcasts, merchandise, and advanced opportunities for Chasing Earhart events. Find a full list of available shows and rewards at patreon.com/chasingearhart. You can also follow the project on social media, where our team posts all of our shows, news, and project information. And that hashtag is @ChasingEarhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Tom Myers. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarris Schmidt, and narration is done by Forrest Burgess. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. Chris Evan Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education, and no infringement is intended. The Chasing Earhart podcast is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.